Podomatic mobile app.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm here. I'm Dr. Lisa. I give a shit. I do. I mean, and you know what I was thinking about today? I was thinking about how money really rules the world. That's what we're talking about when we talk about, you know, all the stuff with the NRA and all that other shit and all politics and all that. It's all about money. It's all about money, and it's about such huge amounts of money that it's not even about survival or any or even getting a nice pair of shoes. So I just want to remind you that how much freedom there is if your life isn't centered around money. Be grateful. Make what you make as much as you need and not more. Okay? Yeah. We got to eat though. All right. So anyway, I'm Dr. Lisa. I'm a self-proclaimed psychotherapist. I have a psychological bent on my conversations on this show. So hang in there. But today is a very, very, very exciting day because I'm not just Dr. Lisa anymore. I am Miss Subways 2017. It is a remarkable, remarkable experience that I had last Thursday night at the City Reliquary. So it was this huge sold out thing put on by the Writers New York and the City Reliquary. It was a benefit and it involved a competition, a pageant, if you will. And there were just so many talented performers and so many fabulous costumes. And quite honestly, I don't sing or dance. You guys know that. Have you ever heard me? Like, you know how not musical I am. So I was just surrounded by an enormous, enormous amount of talent. And I did this little monologue about, like, you know, growing up in New York, moving back here after college, and my relationship with the subway. So I actually wound up winning. Well, what I did say, which I hope helped influence the judges, is that I thought it was about time that a postmenopausal woman, you know, I'm age 61, postmenopausal woman won the title. So I'm going to give it that. So we had some awesome judges. We had Reverend Jen, the star of all art stars and the Lower East Side, you know, goddess forever. Like, Reverend Jen is one of the most important people in the history of the Lower East Side, creative people. We also had Roger Clark from New York One. That was huge. And we also had the famous Janine Garofalo, a comedian, actress, all that. And we had another really well-known comedian. I'm blanking on his name. Do you know, Glace?
Yeah, I think it's called Baratunde Thurston. I never know whether you say the E at the end.
Yeah, Baratunde. Thank you. I have Glace here, thank God. So anyway, so here's the deal. This is what's going to happen today. I have the first runner-up, somebody who I just met and I'm totally enamored with. His name is Glace Chase. Hello, Glace.
Hi, darling. How are you?
Good. He was the first runner-up, just a ridiculous talent, just an incredible performer. Like, I mean, this is what I remember. I remember when they were evaluating us, Janine Garofalo just said one word, charisma. And I was like, yeah, that guy's, or I thought it was a woman, literally. I did think it was a woman the whole time until afterwards. I thought it was a woman, so I said to myself, she's going to win. I was sure she should have won, frankly. Except, well, we'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, so Glace is my guest today. I've invited a lot of the people who helped organize the event, the people from the, you know, the different the organizations, the Writers. I'm blanking on this. Help me out.
The Writers Alliance, I think it was.
See how smart she is.
I know, for this time in the morning as well. I'm so proud of myself.
Thank you. And the City Relic Quarry. And so there were, anyway, those people I'm hoping will call in. And you're welcome to call in. The number is 718-928-9732. And before we get started, I just want to make sure that you guys know the names of all the people that we competed with. Weren't they incredible?
God, it was so much fun. Everybody was amazing.
Don't you think the best part about it was the spirit of this thing, right?
Oh, it was kind of crazy, and it was so New York. It was so kind of Brooklyn in a way, you know, the kind of performance artists, and it was all a little kooky, which just made it so special and so funny.
It was so great because it had that perfect balance of kooky, as you say, and then just really well organized and professional, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the event was kind of huge. I walked in, I was a little like, oh God, this is a big event.
I know, it was sold out. And the tickets cost $20, folks. Okay, so don't just, you know, there you go. But like, it was amazing, right?
Yeah, and those judges too. I nearly died when I saw those names. I was like, what is that? That's like, this is like significant people.
I know, it was the real, real deal. So I just, you know, the point is that the spirit of the whole event was just really, really beautiful, really special, really what we all hope to have in our alternative lifestyles, or which it was the best of it, where everybody comes together and really can be themselves and be appreciated for exactly who they are. Did you feel that way?
Absolutely. As I said, I mean, I think the New York kind of element was just so good because the city is, you know, I mean, I know it's changed a little bit, but it's really a home for all the alternative kind of creatures. We all kind of flock here if we're from somewhere else. And that's kind of what I thought. It celebrated so well. And it was just lovely to be around so many kind of diverse and eclectic people and performers and to celebrate too.
Yeah. And you got it, folks. So I'm going to read the names of all the other performers. We have Robert. So you can see how the competition was fierce. Robert Coover, Dylan Mars Greenberg. He was amazing. He did this song that he wrote and he danced. Laura Van Holt, Lady A. She was Hedra, a.k.a. Miss Derailment, which was hilarious. Anna Paone, Carrie Murphy, a.k.a. Sunday Fantastique, Glace Chase, Susie Q, Melissa Rasha, Rachel Lieb. And we also had La Rococo's and the original, you know, last year's Mr. Lower East Side, John. Did you meet? You saw him at the end? He was great. Did you know? No,
I didn't know he was Mr. Lower East Side.
He's the official Lower East Side, which we have Reverend Jen to thank for the Mr. Lower East Side pageant.
I think a friend of mine won that. A guy I'd slept with, actually.
Really? What's his name? Can you say?
Oh, God, I can't remember that.
He must have been pretty cool. Fabulous.
He was amazing. He was this big berry guy, and he was wonderful in bed, too.
Nice.
So, yeah, he moved to L.A., though.
Well, screw him.
Exactly.
Let's get his title back.
Yeah, exactly. What a dick.
So I wanted to kind of relive a little bit of this. So, Glace, you helped me. What was it like for you? What was it like? How did you feel?
Well, God, when we walked in, it was just so crowded, and I was like, oh, God, here we go. Adrenaline, and I was a little tired, actually, because, I'm a working queen, and I'd been performing, and I'd also created my own outfit.
Which was fucking incredible. I mean, you know what, I can't do any of this justice, but I have all the pictures and stuff on my Facebook page. It's up right now. Help yourself, okay, or Google it. There's a lot of pictures. You got to see it. It's very visual, yeah?
Yeah, and so I'd created this dress kind of based on the subway map, so it was all the different colors of the subway, and I sewed it. And of course, because, you know, I'm a working queen, so I was running late, and that whole day I was sewing, and I was so worried that I wasn't going to be able, like, I wasn't going to get ready in time. But then, of course, you always pull it together right at the last minute, but I walked in, I was a little frazzled.
Oh, You didn't look it.
Okay. Well,
no,
you know.
Of course, because you're the consummate performer. So I wanted to find out a little bit about you because I enjoyed your vibe so much, and I love that we got to be on stage together. But you're a bit of a mystery to me. So you're from Australia?
I am. I'm originally from Australia.
And when did you move here?
About 7 years ago.
And what did you move here? Were you a performer in Australia?
I was actually a playwright, believe it or not.
Wow.
And, yeah, and, you know, dare I say it, a playwright of some success.
I would have no doubt.
And but basically, I kind of moved. I kind of had a bit of a nervous breakdown.
Really?
And I needed to get away because I was sort of known, and I needed to figure out if I was trans or not, and I needed to be around, I think, you know, more eclectic, more accepting people than I
really?
Found in Australia, yeah.
I'm surprised to hear that. Where in Australia?
I was living in Sydney.
But that seems like a really open-minded town.
I mean, it kind of is, but it also kind of isn't. And, I mean, that was my personal experience. I think
yeah.
other people have, you know, have a better time of it than I did.
So is New York more open-minded? It's like a lot more open-minded?
Oh, unquestionably. This is a city of eccentrics. I mean, even when you're really kind of wealthy and, Upper East Side, like, I still feel there's a kind of a real pride in, you know, New York's weirdness. And so as an eccentric, as a kind of creative person, I just felt automatically when I arrived, I felt kind of welcomed, which is a big deal for me. And when you kind of discover that in New York, you're considered a crazy person, I didn't think I really realized, you know, how eccentric, how kooky I kind of am until I moved here. And I was like, I was overjoyed, actually, because if New York City kind of rates you as...
Right,
like,
right. It's,
you know,
very validating.
Yeah. I was like, well, no wonder I was having a hard time.
Exactly. So it's been really... And you know what I love? I love that you're reminding us how we can't... How special it is here, and not to take that for granted. We forget when you've been here for so long. Sometimes I take it for granted.
Yeah, I mean, and I think too, like, you know, a lot of people are always lamenting for old school New York, and I understand that. Like,
yeah.
I was here a couple of times, of course, before I moved, and so I sort of know a little bit about how it's transitioned. But I still think that it is still a home for artists. People still flock here. And certainly the scene in Bushwick, and, you know, is kind of crazy. It's kind of like, you know, the way kind of Manhattan, Lower East Side and whatnot used to be, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what I used to enjoy about that craziness of, like, Reverend Jen's open mic and all that stuff is still here. You know,
absolutely.
Surf Reality is baked into Radio Free Brooklyn, Rob Pritchard,
yeah,
and all this stuff. And so I think that it's here. It's just like you have to find it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think New York, I mean, like every city, it evolves and changes, but
yeah.
it is still here. It is still a home. It's still a magnet, I think, for people, you know, around America and the world. It's New York City. It still is.
Totally. And, you know, it's funny because when you were talking about that, I was thinking about the show that you did last Saturday night. This was so amazing because, let me just tell you guys. So, Glace does this, help me out here. Glace does this weekly show called Neurotica at the Metropolitan Bar on Lorimer Street in, you know, Williamsburg.
And it's a monthly show, though. So, yeah.
What day of the month?
It's the first Saturday of
first
every month.
First Saturday. And so she gave me a heads up that she was going to be, like, doing a funny thing, trashing me, and that if I wanted to come, I could show up at the end and we would have some fun together.
Well, so, I still am trashing you, sweetheart. You stole the crown directly from me. That crown was mine. I was so ready for it. And I was a little, I'm not going to lie, I was a little devastated.
Were you really upset?
Well, not upset, but I was a little shocked. And then also, too, I didn't even thank anybody because I think in my head I was like in the Miss Universe pageant when they announced the, like, because they announce the first runner-up, and then, of course, you know who's won. So, and then the person that's won just goes to the stage. And so in my head, I was playing that.
Did you think you were going to win? Because this is the thing. I have never been as shocked in my life. I did not expect to win. But I mean, I could see how you would have expected. I expected you to win also. Well, I did.
I mean, I don't want to sound arrogant. You never have it in the back.
No, but let's be real.
Well, I wanted to. Actually, it surprised me how much I wanted to win.
Really?
And I felt like, because in the second, you know, the second set, I know that I screwed it up. And so I felt annoyed at myself. And I felt self-conscious.
Oh, I know that feeling.
And so when they, I mean, you never know, but I was just like, oh.
Okay, so let's tell the people what happened here. See, so Glace really did genuinely, I thought it would be you or Dylan maybe. Right?
Yes, Dylan's
but at the
amazing.
End. But at the end, I thought it was going to be you because they eliminated Dylan out of they had the finalists and then eliminated Dylan, the first finalist. So it seemed like out of the rest, it would be you.
No, well, I thought I knew you were the competition.
Really? You had said that to me and I was just shocked because your talent to me as a performer seems so much more substantial because you are actually outperforming and like in public a lot more regularly and stuff and in your costume. But anyway, so we thought you were going to win. We both did.
Well, I mean, I'm going to be falsely modest and say you never have it in the bag. But honestly, because of watching your performance, which was so beautiful, like kind of chronicling, you know, your life in New York City, I was just like, and you played it so well.
I
wanted to slap you when you said it's time for a postmenopausal woman to be mistaken. Bitch, she's gonna like you wowed the crowd with that, and I was just like, oh, your charisma.
Oh, but let's focus back to you, how you failed.
Oh God, I am.
So anyway, folks, this is so fucking crazy how I stole the crown from Glace. This is how I stole it because we did our performances, and then we all went through these follow up questions. And Glace was asked, what were you at? You tell us.
I was, so basically there were subway questions. And so somebody was like asked, you know, a guy's masturbating in front of you. What do you do? And I was asked, so Dr. Zizmore is sitting opposite you. What do you do? And I didn't know who Dr. Zizmore is. The name. And I blanked. And I did a little improv about not knowing who it was and asking somebody and then trying to like realize, you know, that they were famous. But I screwed it up. And of course, when somebody was like, it's the cosmetic surgery ad guy, I was like, of course I know that.
You did know it?
I mean, I know the reference. I just didn't know the name.
Oh, you knew it. Oh, I had this feeling. Oh, that's even worse.
I know. Because
I'm so glad you're here. We've got to talk you through this. This is terrible.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
And I've had so much Botox in my face. I just thought cruel ironies of life. The cosmetic surgery I lose to.
This is hilarious because what I was assuming was that you were from Australia and that guy hasn't been around in like 5 or 10 years.
Well, yeah. I mean, because then everybody was like shocked and scandalized. I could feel the resentment in the room. And people are like, oh, maybe you've just arrived. I'm like, I've been here 7 years. That's not nothing. That is not nothing.
And did you see Dr. Zizmore posters? Were they around 7 years ago?
They were. I think they were. But, I mean, I remember I do remember the cosmetic, you know, like with the bad faces.
Yeah.
I do remember it.
Yeah, you've seen it.
But I just didn't know that, like, the name didn't
fair.
Come in.
That's fair. And also, I must say, like, not everybody got... Like, the question I got was, what would you do? Like, how would you handle yourself if there was, like, a loud guy with a boombox or something? And you got a question that you actually had to have a reference and know something. And so that was just bad luck, really.
I know. And I wanted the masturbation question. Because I was like, well, I mean, I see that all the time.
Yeah, just join it.
Exactly.
You need help.
I mean, just check out what the junk is. And if you're like, can it just, you know.
Work with it.
Exactly. Take your pants off.
So, So what was that? So you were definitely, so how did that, like, what happened? What was the, tell us about the emotional roller coaster.
Oh God. I just, when I didn't know, and I should have asked for clarification, I should have said no. I should have just made it really epic and just been like, I need the clarification. Who is Dr. Zizmore? And or work the crowd. And I didn't. And
you just second guessed yourself is what happened. Is that what happened?
Yeah.
And then afterwards, were you like,
I went bright red. I felt so stupid. And I was so annoyed at myself because I'm good at improv. Like, I'm good at being in the moment.
Of course.
And then just sometimes it's not your moment and you freeze under pressure.
Sure.
And I just couldn't believe it. I was so angry at myself.
I bet. So, like, that night, because I relate to this. You know, you guys all know this. I mean, you don't have to be a performer to know that, like, you've been in the room with somebody who's really hot that you want to, like, go out with, and then you were standing right next to them and you got tongue-tied. It's basically, it's like that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, everybody, like, we all have this, and then it bugs you for like weeks.
Yeah, and it
so
is.
What happened? Did you go home and you couldn't sleep or something? What happened? Did it bug you all night? I'm so sorry.
Oh, it actually did. Do you know what? I went, this is so stupid.
What happened?
I walked to the bar. What was so weird, Lisa, nobody would look me in the eye after.
Really?
Yeah, it's just like everybody was sort of like, oh, yeah, like I just felt very ignored.
Oh, that's not funny.
I know. I was sort of like, and I felt very self-conscious. And my friends that came, they just left. And suddenly I was just sort of standing there and I was like, I know I've done a good job. Why is nobody talking to me?
Your friends left?
They did. They went around the corner to a restaurant, didn't even tell me, didn't even
text
me.
Get the fuck out.
I know. And I was like, I walked to a bar that I knew my friends, my drag queen friends were performing at. And I walked in and I cried.
I bet.
Just because I felt so stupid.
I bet. That's so frustrating.
And I worked so hard. I actually had
you
worked really hard.
You did work hard. That costume was a real,
thank
real
you. Yeah, and
feat of artistry, for
and,
sure.
You know, I put a lot of work into it. I mean, and that doesn't mean anything.
No, it does. It does, though. You were invested. I mean, of course. But you also put... It's a weird thing. Like, if you had just, like, not... been, if you hadn't even made it to the finals, it would have been easier for you.
Absolutely, because I knew that I'd froze, and then as soon as I found out it was the cosmetic surgery kind of dermatologist guy, just the irony of that, literally with my history of Botox.
Oh, really?
And yeah, absolutely. I was just like, I was kind of like, you're kidding me. I lost on the Botox guy. I felt so stupid.
Oh, I bet. Well, I'll tell you from my point of view, what I saw just as an outside observer, I saw that you missed the question, and I felt bad because I know what that's like to have that feeling, but I didn't think like about it again, and I don't think a lot of people did. But if I had been in your shoes, I wouldn't have. I'd still be like, I'd probably go home and slice my wrists. I wouldn't even be crying.
I don't need to fully slice, but I thought about it.
No, but that's the kind of thing that makes me really like crazy. I mean, I personally do not, you know, I'm very like, you fucked up again. But I mean, it's really not a big deal, but. But at the moment, I could see it being intense.
Well, and you get into that negative cycle in your head. You're just like, why did I do that? You know, shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Yeah.
And you're just, and you don't, I mean, that's the thing with live performance. You don't get to do it again.
And
I just had let myself down and I knew it and I was annoyed.
So as the therapist, I want to make sure that have you moved past it?
No.
No, you're still, seriously?
I'm still angry at
you're
you.
You're still angry at yourself? That's hilarious.
No, at you.
Oh, at me. Oh, okay. Oh, well, that's cool.
I blame you, Lisa. I blame you.
I know a lot of people. Get in line, honey. Get in line. Yeah, I'll tell you, there was a little bribery there.
I knew I should have done that.
Somebody a little tongue. You know?
Oh, well, I mean, God, and I'll get on my knees for anything, too. I just can't believe I didn't offer it.
Too bad. Maybe you're not, yeah, well, you know.
Too nice.
Not
for
the
my
right
own
grade
good.
Sex. It's a male. But anyway, the point is it was really, really crazy, crazy event. And, you know, I've been wondering about how it got organized, and we don't really even know. We're hoping that people will call in and tell us, like Sarah or Sarah Celentano from the City Reliquary might call in, or Emily Gallagher, Alex Lowe from the Writers Alliance. So I'm giving them a shout out if they want to call in. Because, I mean, actually, this young woman, Natasha Frost, wrote this great story on Atlas Obscura today. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did. I love that site, too.
Yeah, and she really educated me personally about the whole story of Miss Subways in a very concise way, because I did not know all of that. And that was a real gift in terms of, like, the culture of Miss Subways, which is really interesting. And also because it's so great how it has, how the people that reorganized this one, which it hasn't been done in, like, I don't know, since the 70s or something like that, how they reorganized this one made it so free-spirited and inclusive. And I feel like it's not just that it's feminism has evolved, it's just that humanity has evolved. Did you feel like that?
Absolutely. And it was lovely because it was an all-genders event, and it felt like it had updated the concept, which is such a tongue-in-cheek. So, like, you know, being like, you know, the poster girl of the subways. you know, in the past, and now it updated it to include everybody, all genders, everybody. All crazy people of New York City.
Yeah, I mean, there was one woman who might have, there was only one person, that lovely woman, she just happened to be really good, you know, really pretty. She sang a song. There was one woman who looked like classically beautiful.
Yes, it's she's sitting right in front of you, Lisa.
No, not you. Not you at all.
I hate you.
Queen. You queen. That's what you are.
You're what not, I am is talented, beautiful, and gorgeous.
No, you're a queen who would never have been Miss Subways in 1945. I'm sorry. There is no fucking way.
Discrimination, Lisa. Discrimination.
Well, it just would never have happened. I don't know if it would have happened for me then either. Because at age 61, back in 1940, I probably would have been dead or wanted to kill myself because I would have had like a bunch of kids.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was tough times. But as a child, I always wanted to be Vanna White.
Did you really?
Absolutely. I always imagined myself as like a news weather girl.
That's really what you thought? Like in Australia? Did you practice it?
A little bit, actually. Like, yeah. I always loved that sort of glamour, especially the kind of Wheel of Fortune kind of, what do you call that? A game show kind of hostess.
Yeah. Right, right.
I love that.
I could totally see you do. Well, that's kind of like what you're doing at the Metropolitan Bar.
Yeah, absolutely.
As Miss Neurotica. It was so funny. That was the best crowd ever. That was so much fun. It really kind of captured that feeling again on Saturday night. It's the first Saturday.
Yeah, first Saturday.
I'm coming back. I'm coming back to that. I'm going to come back and give you shit again.
So
how did you find out about the contest? I wanted to hear that.
So my friend's mother actually got in touch with me.
Your friend's mother?
Yes, my friend Gabe. His mother, Bernadette. Apparently is a little bit of a fan of mine. I had no idea, because she's seen me host bingo and stuff and just been in hysterics and she contacted me. She's like, you need to be Miss Subways.
Yes.
And I, as soon as I saw it, I was like, you're right. I do need this. I need to be this. and then she sent me the info. And she's like, and I'll help. I'm going to make you a little headdress.
I love that.
I know. And she made this like beautiful MTA kind of Metro card.
Oh, so good.
Kind of headdress. Fabulous. With Metro card roses. And it was a lot of work. I was like, bitch, you did good.
It looked great. And it photographed great. There's lots of pictures.
So. Most importantly, yeah. It photographed very well.
So, wow.
Yeah. And she was there on the night. And apparently, even though they all went out and had dinner, and even though they just didn't tell me.
I'm really shocked.
I know. Isn't that not rude.
Well, I don't understand it.
It's just,
they probably thought you were like in the going to be in the green room and taking pictures or something.
I know, but I lost. I lost. How could you not send a message of support? It wasn't like I'd won. If I'd won, of course you ignore your friends. That's the point of winning.
So funny.
And so, like, they all, and so anyway, so she was there and she sent me a message of support afterwards.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, and she actually said, if I'd known you'd be this devastated, I would never have recommended it.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I'm not that devastated.
Oh, they thought, people thought that you had, isn't that interesting? You showed your vulnerability. People thought you were a lot tougher.
I'm normally,
well, you're not used to losing at anything, obviously.
Absolutely. I do
you
my
never
own.
Lose.
Exactly. So, that was my intention.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, yeah. Well, anyway, I want to remind people to that they're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and I'm Dr. Lisa, or I think I'm Miss Subway. I'm gonna Miss Subways today.
Yeah, take the crown, honey. You won it. Take
I
it.
I did win it.
Rub my face in it.
I'm going to, bitch. I'm Miss Subways, bitch.
Yeah.
And I'm here with the loser runner-up, Glace Chase, who almost won, but I guess doesn't even know who Dr. Zizmore is.
Oh, I'm
well,
sorry.
You know, what are you going to do? But anyway, you should, you know what? We are really trying to carry the mantle of free speech and free everything, free music, free will, free this whole spirit that we're talking about, and we need your help because we're not corporate. We're not making money. This is costing a lot of money. So if you're enjoying this station, I mean, people give to NPR all the time. You should be giving us some, you know, just whatever you can, you know, give up, like have a half a pack of cigarettes and give us whatever the rest you save. That's probably like $25 by now. And just go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. Or if you want to support this show, you can just go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/Dr. Lisa gives a shit and give me the credit, you know. And then, Jesus, I'll, you know, the people here will, you know, I can, you know, keep doing this. So, yeah, so. Do you have a lot of performing background? Like, have you been trained? You're trained?
Actually, I did go to acting school many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. But that was an interesting time. That was like, you know, it was about 10 years ago. And basically, my experience was like being taught how to be a man, which...
What does that mean?
Well, it just means like butching up and...
What does that mean? Like, what do you... Like, when you went to acting school, you I'm going to say that you've probably known you were gay since you were a teenager or have identified as gay since then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or since you were you know, old enough to know.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I think tougher for me is you know, gender and the trans stuff. And because I kind of had a lot of female energy, and of course there's no roles for that, at least there wasn't 10 years ago. I think mm-hmm. things are changing now. Mm-hmm. But basically it was like kind of, you know, being taught how to be a man so I might, you know, get cast in
things. Oh, weird.
Yeah, and when I look at it, no wonder, I mean, it did kind of, it had a big lasting effect on me.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that it, you know, it kind of, it was tough. And straight after that, that's when I really started performing in drag and starting to really explore my gender. And really, gender has been like kind of the dominant
is that right?
In my life. Yeah, it's been it's a struggle.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like it's still kind of in some ways it still remains a little bit of a struggle.
Yeah, you know, I've said this to Glace even before twice already that when I first, you know, that I didn't realize that he was really a male, physically a male until after the show, and you know when I really started talking to him. Because the feeling, the vibe is so female, like in the best way. A female that is strong and empowered and intelligent and all the best kind of females. So I felt a certain bond that I would have with a female, and I still feel that way, but I'm kind of like, I was saying to Glace that I'm glad I didn't realize that until after I really had a real feeling about him. So it's because it makes me feel really comfortable. But so the point is that for sure, people, you must be very confusing to people.
I am.
Just by your...
And you know, Lisa, just to clarify, I probably more identify as a she than a he, but no issue. But it's like, it is confusing. It's been confusing in every, like, in trying to get jobs, in my dating life, and like, that stuff kind of gets to you. I think especially if you're, you know, like, I have a lot of, like, transgender friends that have gone the binary, you know, like, they're male and they've become female, or they're female and they've become male.
Mm-hmm.
I was so indecisive, and I didn't know whether I should, you know, fully transition and become, you know, a woman. And it's still, I mean, it's the big decision I've never made in my
really?
Life.
Are you,
yeah.
Do you think about it?
I mean, I do. I mean, I've kind of, now that, I mean, I feel a little bit more resolved.
Mm-hmm. How old are you now?
I'm 32.
Mm-hmm. You look, well, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it was tough. And, you know, it was only probably a year ago I kind of went, no, I think I'm okay being in the middle. I think that's where I belong. But mm-hmm. I kind of understand now that comes with some prejudice.
So how does it affect you?
I mean, there's kind of two things. I mean, I think employment-wise, it's really hard to know where to put yourself.
So what happens? Is it like a job that you apply for, or?
I mean, yeah, like, I mean, I could probably, you know, get a job, but I'm a performer ultimately. And, like, it's just the conversation, you know. I was doing stand-up comedy, and you go into those rooms and they're so male.
Oh, I know.
And people kind of are judging you.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, even in the drag community, the drag community is much more accepting, I think, of trans, and we're all a little on that continuum. And that was sort of where I kind of found a home, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it sort of limited what I could do performatively.
In the gay community?
Well, no, not so much in the gay community, but I mean, in some ways.
In the comedy community,
for sure. Yeah, in the comedy, absolutely.
They're probably more comfortable with a straight female than a, you know, bisexual or trans or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like, the drag community is all about looks all the time. You know, like, it's
right.
Turning a look. So, and it's, dare I say it, it's not my strongest suitor. It's not really the thing that I'm that most interested
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm.
And so suddenly I had to really try and learn that and up my game. And it kind of bores me. But I find, you know, the comedy world, I think I've just finally got enough confidence to sort of go in and do that and understand that, you know, there is prejudice, and that's, you have to kind of build yourself up to cope with that.
Right. And also to know that, it's not a comment on your abilities.
Yes. And it's not a comment on your personality. And that is the one thing, you know, New York has really given me that, it just through the opportunity to perform so much
mm-hmm.
and kind of be around people that are kind of, you know, that just don't give a shit, actually.
Yeah.
You know, like, so many kind of, you know, the Brooklyn, the Bushwick kind of scene. It's just people are less invested, and finding that kind of home has really helped with the confidence and just to go, you know, it's okay. You know, you have.
Right.
I think what happened is every gig I had to take, I took so seriously because you're out there on a ledge.
I mean, the kind of performance that you do, I can't even.
And so if you have a bad gig or you're trying to figure it out, mm-hmm. like, everyone was just like, you know, what the fuck? Like, I don't even know what to do with you. I don't know who you are. And that kind of got to me, actually.
Were you performing in scripted things, or what kind of things are you talking about?
I was doing a lot of stuff, kind of what I do now, which is sort of like demented storytelling, comedy, cabaret. And I did do a little bit of scripted stuff as well, you know, plays uh-huh. and whatnot. And
so, like, what can you give me? Because this is the truth. I'm having a hard time understanding why you. I mean, I believe you, but I can't picture you being discriminated against in as a performer. I could in a regular job, sure, but not as a performer. So can you explain that?
Oh, sure. I mean, maybe it was self-imposed. I don't know. But like working in comedy clubs in Australia.
Oh, in Australia? Yeah. You were doing comedy clubs in Australia?
Well, I was trying to. I mean, there was a great example. I did a Melbourne Comedy Festival. Incidentally, that's I met Janine Garofalo there, actually.
Oh, really? Did she remember you?
No.
Oh, okay. Meets everybody.
I know. And I was running around the comedy festival getting people to sign my butt, getting comedians to sign my ass. And I remember because, you know, it's a really big festival, and you kind of have to go out there and spruik your show. Mm-hmm. And I remember doing that. And it was reported back to me that one of the festival organizers said, you know, that is the worst thing that he can do because, you know, he's putting people off. And
having the butt signing thing? Well, not, what are you talking about?
Just like going out and spruiking people because I was
spruiking?
Flyering, exactly.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, like you know, you're intimidating people. You're scaring people because... You know, you got makeup on and people are intimidated by you. And
that's weird.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Because that's a job at a festival, right? Isn't it?
You'd think so. You'd think so. Well, and that, just the way that kind of came back to me, you know, like that's just an example, you know?
Yeah, hurtful. Really hurtful.
Hurtful. And maybe, I mean, no, goddammit, I am going to go for it. That sort of stuff really got to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then there was Julian Clary. There's a lot of comics that kind of did that. I don't know how they got past that. But probably I know for a fact they didn't get past it in Australia. They did not develop their acts in Australia.
Oh, so that's partly why you
moved.
Came here.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it took me, probably I had a bit of PTSD from coming from Australia. It took me a couple of years to sort of... You know, realize you're not in Sydney anymore.
Wow.
You can, you know, people are going to respond more positively to
you.
Wow,
we got to hold on to like respecting that we have that here because I hear so many people, and I'm one of them sometimes. I mean, I've been guilty of it where it's like, yeah, it's so normal here now, but we still have like this kind of, I mean, out there it's kind of normal, but there is still like this amazing, you know, there's a place for everybody here if you find it. There really is.
And, you know, because I run, you know, like one of my gigs is I run my drag queen tour guide business, and which is sort of like interactive roaming walking tours of the West Village. And one of the things I learned in that gig, because I've been doing it 2 years, is you're on the street and you're really vulnerable. Like you're on the street in full drag in daylight, you know, interacting with just walkers by.
Mm.
And that probably doing that gig so much taught me how, you know, I've got a facility. I've got a, mm-hmm. I can actually interact with people.
Right.
And people like it. And it was only because I was doing that so much and I did it through good times and bad, you know, like when I was hungover, when I didn't feel great. And then when I felt great, I kind of understood, oh, you kind of got this. Like, it's okay.
Right. Yeah. What was it like being an adolescent or a child and having the sexual confusion that you had in Australia? What was that like?
It was pretty rough.
How did your parents... What do your parents do?
I'm kind of working class. My mother was a nurse, and and then my dad. I mean, I had two parents. My biological dad ran a tire business,
mm-hmm.
and then my stepdad, who's kind of really my father, he was a crane operator.
Uh huh.
And
did you have brothers or sisters?
I have an older sister.
Is she cool?
She's amazing.
Yeah. So she.
Yeah. And all
looked
my.
Out.
Yeah, I mean, we never got along, actually, but we do now, because everyone else has passed.
Oh,
so.
I get it, yeah. But were they, so how did they respond to you?
I mean, okay, I guess, not great.
Do you think it's because you were from a working class background, like that people weren't, like, cultivated with the bullshit?
I mean, I think so. I mean, because my dad ran this tire business,
yeah.
And in a way, you know, you're kind of growing up as the boy in the family,
yeah.
And kind of being groomed to like take it over,
yeah.
And of course,
this
effeminate kind of, you know, pizzazzy kind of kid, like it's the last thing I was going to do,
right?
And I mean, like there was violence and stuff, absolutely,
yeah.
It was a rough kind of upbringing.
So what happened? I'm sorry, interrupt you. What happened with the kids, the other kids?
Like as in at school and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, bullied, absolutely.
Like what was that really traumatic or what was that like?
I mean, I don't even really.
You don't even think about it?
Not really. I mean, I'd already, oh God, this is like, we're going to such deep territory, aren't we?
Oh, shut up, you bitch.
Okay, I'll, fine, Miss Subway.
You loser. Shut up, loser. I own you now.
Oh, you do. God damn you, Lisa. God damn you.
Levy.
Levy, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay, now we're talking.
Yeah. No, I kind of built up a pretty strong resilience to that kind of stuff. I know it happened. It happened a lot. But you
took it in stride after a while.
Yeah, you absolutely do. I mean, I was defiant, actually. I was just like, fuck you. Cool. I'm like going to, you know, I got my glitter jeans when I was 16 and I was wearing them proudly.
Did you have friends that were, you know, in your camp, like the, you know, either boys, girls, gays, were there people that you had
absolutely
that got you?
Yeah, like, I mean, I had a lot of female friends. I had one really close female friend at school. And then after, you know, you kind of meet, you know, I had a lot of great female friends. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think this stuff is, it kind of goes deep. Like, it kind of cuts you in a deeper way.
Yeah.
It takes you a long time to actually excavate and understand the how much it's affected you.
But I'm guessing that a lot of the strength which is going to help you overcome your loss it's really fueled your creativity, I'm guessing, right?
Absolutely.
And I imagine you're taking pride in your uniqueness. You're very unique, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, it took me a long time to really make my peace with that. And now, now I'm like, fuck you, world. Here I am. And no, I mean, not that I was ever apologetic, but I'm not going to feel embarrassed anymore.
Oh, look, we're getting a call.
Oh, excitement.
Are we? I hope we're getting a call. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Is this Alex?
It is Alex.
Can you hear us?
I can hear you, yeah.
You can hear me? Good, good.
Hey, Alex.
Do you hear Glaze?
Hey, Glaze. How's it going?
Yeah.
Good. I'm so glad you called in because, you know, I was saying it's a mystery to us exactly. Like, how did this whole thing get organized? I was mentioning your name. Did you hear me call for you? Alex, help us out here.
I'm at work, so I'm...
Yeah, good, good. I'm glad. You need to do your job.
I did just hear a bit about Glace's background, which is wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
Inspirational, I've got to say.
But we want to hear how this whole pageant extravaganza came together. Whose idea? How did it come together?
So, back in 2009, I lived in Williamsburg, and my wife was out for the evening, and I was, who knows how it happened.
That's how it starts. My wife was out for the evening. Yeah,
that's when the affair started.
Yeah, that's how it starts. Anything that starts with that.
It's when Alex called me for the first time.
Okay. Yeah, your wife was out and?
So I went strolling the streets of Williamsburg and I might have seen an event notice for this event called the Miss G Train Pageant. And it sounded fascinating and a lot of fun. I was like, G-Train pageant? This has got to be fun. And sure enough, it was. So it was at the City Reliquary, the same venue as we had our Subways event. And it was just a night of a lot of fun. There's no political context to that evening. It was just, it turned out there was an exhibition of old Miss Subways photos at the Reliquary. Mm-hmm. And they decided to have an event out in the yard to celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
So they had lots of people dancing and singing and doing different sorts of performances, all based on the G Train. you can imagine what that was like. You know, people joking about running half the platform to get the G Train, and you know, the G Train's inferiority complex for not going between Queens and Brooklyn and never getting into Manhattan. But it was all of the fun, all tongue-in-cheek, and like our event last week, it was very much an inclusive event.
Mm.
And I always remember that. I thought, wow, that was such a fun event. It was in your city at its best. And so I always had in the back of my head that I want to revive or do something similar, or I was hoping the Reliquary might do something similar again. Now, in my spare time, I'm a political activist, so I'm always thinking of...
You're a what? Your spare time, you're...
I'm a political activist.
A what activist?
Political.
Thank you, Glace. Glace is handling this today. Political activist,
Glace,
folks.
Glace. Thank you. Glace is my Aussie friend, understands my accent occasionally.
right. Yeah, you guys have something in common there. Political activist. And what causes do you...
I was a president of a local reform club called the New Kings Democrats a few years ago. We were basically railing against the establishment because there was a lot of corruption within the local Democratic Party.
Oh.
We were trying to oust the party boss, Vito Lopez, who was a very, very corrupt man.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm an activist, and transit issues have always been near and dear to my heart, and I've been involved in a Riders Alliance for many years. So this year, obviously, everything seems to have come to a boil, and the subway's been terrible. Everybody's been talking about it, and it seemed to me too good an opportunity to pass up. An event that, thinking in my memory back to that wonderful night in 2009 when I went to Miss G Train Pageant, thinking to the current chaos, I thought, why don't we, I think this is a great opportunity for an event that both tries to sort of, keep the focus on the political issue of the crazy subway system, but also tries to sort of also conjure up the same magic that I saw in 2009, a nice, fun, open-to-all event where people could really perform and show us their stuff. And so I reached out to Reliquary, I reached out to the Riders Alliance, and everybody thought it was a fun idea, and everybody wanted to be part of it. It was just one of those ideas that people immediately saw the fun aspect of it, and then I started talking to friends who knew friends who knew friends, and before we knew it, they had developed a life of its own.
It's pretty impressive. Don't you think? I mean, you must. So it really came from the. I mean, there's obviously a lot of work. I think a lot of people worked on it, but it really came from that germ of your idea and getting the ball rolling. And I'm sure you worked hard on it. I mean, you pretty much spearheaded it, right? I think so. That's the impression I got.
It was a great collaborative effort. It was one of those events that I've never hosted an event anything like it. If it had just been to me, that event would have been a shadow.
I'm guessing it exceeded your expectations, did it, from that idea in the beginning?
It did, absolutely. That's always part of me. I don't know about you guys, but whenever I have an idea of an event, I always immediately think it's going to be the greatest thing ever in the first few days. That excitement of the new idea takes you off in this wonderful whirlwind of imagination. You think, wow, who would not see the fun aspect of this? And there's going to be hundreds and thousands of people who want to come to this amazing event. And of course, after a few days of you come down a little bit from the initial idea and you realize, oh, wait a second, this is a little more difficult and a little more complex than I realized. I was lucky that I had people like folks of the Reliquary, Sarah Chantal, they really stepped up and did an amazing job.
She's awesome.
Emily Gallagher, another local activist, who she was our connection to Reverend Jen. And I think between Sarah's involvement and Emily and Rev Jen's, that's when it started really taking off.
Because Reverend,
obviously,
right?
Reverend Jen knows her stuff, and she was a lot of fun to work with. You get into email exchange. I've never met Reverend Jen before, but then I get into email exchanges with her where she'd be going from wonderful, imaginative ideas and suddenly throwing out all these ideas. You just realize somebody was just taking the gist of an idea and just running with it.
Oh, she's brilliant. Yeah. There we go. We're going to do it. You're going to do it next year. Is that right?
I think we have to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about.
You have to do it next year.
This needs to be an annual event. It's too good.
For sure. I mean, everyone loved it. So let's talk about the money. Did you guys raise some money?
We did. We've raised some money for Reliquary, which is a wonderful, for those of you who've never been to Reliquary, you must go visit. It's a wonderful treasure trove of New York City artifacts. You walk by it and you don't realize what magic is in store within, but you can find it's an amazing place.
Mm-hmm.
So we raised some money for the Reliquary, and we raised some money for the Writers Alliance, which is a terrific advocacy group for the transit system, and it's been the one who's, before it was cool, really pushing the state government to put more money into the subway system. And God bless them for that work, because we need more people like that.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about the Writers Alliance. I hadn't been aware of it before.
The Writers Alliance started probably within the last, last 6 or 7 years, I want to say. It's pretty new.
Mm-hmm.
I was introduced to it when I was sitting down with another activist in a cafe in Park Slope, and this fellow just came along and started chatting to us, and it turned out that was the leader of the Writers Alliance, and he described this model of an organization to me, which I thought was wonderful. And the model was this: everybody could become members at whatever rate they want, but they had to do on a monthly basis. So you could as much as $1 a month, $2 a month, $20 a month,
really
whatever.
Smart. And do you guys have meetings and stuff?
Well, their great idea was to start asking each sort of member to, or sort of select members to just have it, their own events. So I remember the first few years of the Writers Alliance was pretty much you'd get invited to a happy hour every few months from somebody else who wanted to just like have people along to talk about the Writers Alliance and the transit system. And it was just one of those where you're just getting a network of people.
Do you think I could advertise it on here as a good way for like people to hook up?
I would love for you to do that. That'd be wonderful.
So it's a great way, like if you want to meet like somebody to date, that would be a good place to meet them. A happy hour.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Writers Alliance is a good group of people, and it's a big group of people, and it's a wonderful group of people. For anybody interested, there's actually a gala. The annual gala is on the October
16th. Oh, wow.
So that might be a really good opportunity to learn more and have a fun night. In fact, I'd love for you guys to join if you're available that night.
That would be fun. That would be really super fun if I can wear my crown.
I think you should wear your crown.
Absolutely, you should.
If I can show off the crown that Reverend Jen made, I would love it.
An amazing crown.
Yeah, I know.
So good.
I know. It's in my living room tonight, right now.
You just look at it every night.
I do. I do. I would sleep with it, but I wouldn't want to ruin it. So we're going to have to go, but are you at a job? What do you do, Alex?
Yeah, I do a job.
Maybe you don't want to say. Do you?
No, it's cool.
What is it?
I work at NYU Langone Medical Center.
Wow.
Yeah, I work on healthcare IT and healthcare data and healthcare policy.
Wow.
I'm
glad they have people like you in that area, because we need more people with more people with the right ideas involved in anything to do with healthcare, especially anywhere with the word policy, healthcare and policy. I'm glad you're on it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
So anyway, we have a minute left, so I'm going to say thank you, because I want to make sure that I get to say a proper goodbye to Glace and just tell her again what a loser she is, because I really got to get that into her before we get off the air.
Thank you, Lisa.
You're a loser, Grace. Thanks for calling in, Alex. Thanks for clearing it up.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
You guys did an amazing job. Wonderful performances. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, Alex.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye. That was great. I'm glad we heard from Alex. I have a little bit bigger vision of it now, right?
He's a sweetheart. He's an absolute sweetheart.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, Glace, if you kill me, or if you team up with my husband, he would probably He has. We always talk about how when we go hiking, he's going to push me off a ridge.
Well, I'm going to push you under a train, sweetheart.
Oh, a train!
Exactly. I think that's appropriate. And then, you know, go off and take your crown and use it to like further my career with all the gigs that I've got going around town.
Yeah, I know. Because if you were Miss Subways, man, you would be killing it.
Thank you.
More than you're killing it now.
Thank you. Can I quickly say my